Today's episode of Tracking Food is brought to you by Scout Magazine. If you're wanting to learn more about Vancouver's food and cultural sphere with regards to community news, new restaurant openings, central guides to some of the city's best offerings, as well as who's hiring, Scout is where you should go. You can find them on at scoutmagazine.ca. That's scoutmagazine.ca. Welcome to the Track and Food Podcast. You're joining me on a very beautiful day today in mid-September. My name is Jamie Mom, your host as always. I'm coming to you actually from the Langara campus here in Vancouver. I haven't done a podcast with you guys for a little bit here. I'm actually immersed in school. I'm actually taking journalism courses here to become better at what I'm doing. I've been doing this podcast and with Scout Magazine for the last 6-7 years now, but there's still some stuff that I want to learn and get better at. And I'm actually sitting in the audio labs currently right now and just finished recording an excellent podcast on a topic that's obviously near and dear to my heart. I just finished chatting with Dr. Zhao. Her name is Jia Ying Zhao. She's a doctor and associate professor at the Canadian Research Chair. She's also a professor up at UBC on behavioral sustainability. She runs the behavioral sustainability lab. She works in collaboration with Foundations for Social Change, which is a great nonprofit here in Vancouver that has actually been in the news quite a bit over the last couple of years. And they recently finally published the results of their major study from the New Leaf Project, which was based on this idea of giving money to homeless people here in the greater Vancouver area. The study was started back in 2018, I believe, and it finished in 2020. And they finally, just a couple of weeks ago, finished and published the study. So it's been in the works for a while. I actually reached out to former CEO of Foundations for Social Change, Claire Williams, about 2.5 years ago to have her on the podcast back then, but she unfortunately had to back out. And so I just let it be until I was just waiting until they finally had the study published. So the study just got published. I reached out to them. Claire's no longer there, but I spoke with some people there and I was lucky enough to actually get the lead researcher, Dr. Zhao. And she just came on right now and she's fantastic. She told me to call her Jay-Z, which I thought was really cool. But she's got a really great view of things and they've been doing this study is fantastic. And yeah, I know it's not at the end of the day something that's really more in the food litany of what Tracking Food is and obviously with Scout Magazine. But one of the great things I love about Scout is that Scout does care about our community. We've had a lot of, you know, Michelle and the team and obviously with Andrew in the past, they've always wanted to make sure that we are in touch with our cultural essence of the Scout community. And I feel the same way with Tracking Food. It is a food and culture podcast. And obviously with, you know, this study, it is in our backyard. It was done here in Vancouver. And, you know, I've never been shy to say this, but, you know, I'm a child of poverty. I grew up on my family, my mother, my sister and I, we grew up on social services my entire childhood. I remember waking up and, you know, not having food to eat. I remember going to school hungry. I remember us not having any money. I remember, you know, struggling and moving around a lot. It was, you know, not something that I recommend or, you know, I'm not saying I recommend, but it's not something that's, you know, enviable for anyone to have to go through, but unfortunately people do. And so, you know, when I first came across this study, it was something that I was really curious about. I've always had this feeling that, you know, I think it's a good thing, but I've always felt that the best way to get people out of poverty is to literally just give them money. It literally just give them money and get them out of poverty, not give them enough money to maintain poverty. But I feel so much, I understand for a lot of people that's, you know, we have this prevalence in our world with capitalism and, you know, people need to earn their living and earn their well-being. And I'm not against that. And, you know, there's definitely stereotypes out there that are ingrained in us. And, you know, there's, you know, we've all unfortunately had some people out there who've probably made it reasonable for us to think that way. But, you know, this study is great. They brought on 50 people in the study where they gave cash transfers of $7,500 to them. And then they took another 65 and they were in the control group where they weren't given anything, but some of them were given coaching and stuff like that. So they wanted to see the duality of the two. And coming from what they expected through their hypothesis and their summary, everything they expected was actually turned out pretty much almost the way they thought it was going to be. I'll let Dr. Zhao explain a little bit of that and further in the interview, but basically money was spent on more goods and services and less on the things that people probably assume they're going to spend it on, like drugs, alcohol, and cigarettes and stuff like that. But, you know, the study is, you know, it's been in the news quite a bit over the last couple of years. It's been reported on in, you know, The Atlantic and The New York Times and The Economist and Fox Media. And, you know, CBC did a big profile on it. I think it's something that's been on tip of mind. You know, Claire mentions the idea came to her back in 2014 through watching Rutger Bregman's very famous TED Talk, where he talks about the idea of universal basic income and how people that are homeless, a lot of times it isn't a judge of moral character, but it's also just a judge of, you know, poor circumstances, unfortunately, and at the end of the day, just not having enough money. So one of the things I really wanted to do is just speak with her today and just have a nice conversation, kind of get a sense of what they went through and just kind of, you know, feel a little bit of kind of what the experience was. You know, she definitely has more of a science background. So I try to tease out a little bit more of the emotional aspect of it and try to understanding, you know, what it was for, you know, them to go through the study and what they were trying to accomplish and how they're hoping to, you know, further elaborate on the study and do more good work. So I think there's a lot of the good things that can come from this. But also I want people to listen to this and maybe just have a curiosity and maybe look at maybe the idea of reframing, maybe how you view people that are struggling. Just get those thoughts in your head a little bit. And you know, maybe if you're curious about it more, if you want to read about it more, there's a lot of great literature out there that you can check out. You know, I mentioned that Matthew Desmond, who's been doing a lot of good work in this field for the last couple of years, wrote Evicted back in 2016, and then came out with a really great book this past year called Poverty by America, which I think is fantastic. I read it right when it came out, and I couldn't recommend it more. And just he comes across with a lot of great nuance and perspective in that book. And, you know, stuff like this, what they're doing here with the New Leaf Project, I think is just another great way where, you know, a lot of people are doing some great work out there and they're really trying their best to, you know, look at solutions to our homelessness problem and our poverty problem in our country here in Canada, and maybe just thinking of different ways where we can tackle it and hopefully help people. And I think that's a great thing. So I hope you enjoy this interview. It's not a very long one. I didn't want to take too much of her time. And it's also, you know, it's a study in itself. So there's a lot to talk about. There's also, it just teased away a lot of few things from her. And yeah, I do have a couple podcasts on the way. I am knee deep in school right now, but there's going to be some coming here soon. Got some interviews lined up. We're going to be doing some stuff on the Michelin stuff coming up here. So hopefully some good stuff coming for you soon about that. As always, do check out Scout, our presenting sponsor. We did launch this summer. We launched the book clubs, which I'm involved in. So I hope you're checking that out. There's a lot of great recommendations from Talia and Michelle and myself. And me being the bookworm that I am, this is something I'm very interested in, and loving. And then, yeah, on the site, there's a lot of great stuff coming from the team and a lot of great new restaurants on the way. I still have yet to check out the Watson, but that place looks really cool. I'm really happy for the Vancouver community. I think there's a lot of great things on the way. And I know there's some big openings coming up soon. So stay tuned for a lot of that stuff too as well. So, but appreciate everyone out there listening, and I appreciate you putting up with me and doing a lot of these social podcasts that I like to do. Without further ado, I'll bring on Dr. Zhao. Enjoy. Dr. Zhao, how are you doing this morning? Thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, actually. I've been meaning to talk to someone from the Foundations for Social Change for quite a long time now. I reached out to your former CEO, Claire Williams, about 2 years ago about speaking with someone when news first came out about the study that you guys have been working on for the last couple of years since 2018. And I know that you recently finally published it in peer reviews. Anybody out there who's maybe unfamiliar with what we're talking about today, there's been a great study that was done here by the local community through the UBC and this nonprofit Foundations for Social Change. And the study was called Unconditional Cash Transfers Reduce Homelessness. How is the whole process for you about doing this study, and what does it feel like to now have it done and have a lot of the results that you looked for?
I mean, it took a long time. It took a lot of hard work, but I'm so happy that it's finally published. It's a huge relief for me and the team. Obviously, we're doing expansion project right now, but yeah, no, it feels really good.
So can you walk me through how this project came about? How did you get involved? Did Claire initially propose to come to you about this, or was this something that was like a collaborative?
Yeah, she came to my office in 2016 and said, you know, can we try something different with homelessness reduction? And she wanted to try cash transfers because I think there's a mountain of evidence out there on the efficacy of cash transfers. Also, you know, poverty is a lack of cash and not a lack of character. I think this is Rutger Bregman talked about in his book and in his talks. So we firmly believe that giving people cash is one of the solutions that can help people in poverty. And then I agreed to do the project with her back in 2016, and I I've been responsible for the whole research project, the design, the, you know, evaluation piece of it. So that's how we started.
Yeah, it's interesting. The magazine that I work for, Scout Magazine here in Vancouver, we're pretty prominent in the food and culture scene, but we also do have a really big cultural footprint. And for me, this reaching out to you guys, this was a very personal thing for me as well, because I grew up in poverty and a really deep poverty when I was a child. Just understanding the nature of what that does to the mental aspects. I think you guys talked about this in your study when I was going through it. You talk about how poverty impairs cognitive function and mental health. And I think sometimes people don't, maybe if you've never lived in that experience, people don't really understand how that weighs upon someone's psyche. You know, Rutger Bregman, I love his work. I've read both his books, Utopia for Realists, and then obviously Humankind. That talk that he did back in 2014 is really powerful in his sense of really trying to get reframed things. And what I love about what you guys did here was, is you not only did this study, which we'll try to dig into a little bit here, but also you did like a separate survey where you asked people what their thoughts were about this study and how they thought their participants would react to it. Before we go any further, can you just maybe give a quick overlay of what the study was and what you were trying to achieve? So you basically had 50 participants that were given $7,500, and then you had 65 that were done in a control group. Is that correct?
Yep, that's exactly right. And we followed them for a year, and we found a lot of benefits of the cash transfer. At the same time, debunking a lot of the stereotypes that people have about people in homelessness. So we found the cash transfer reduced homelessness by 99 days per person per year. It increased savings over 1 year, increased spending on food, housing, rent, and transit, and durable goods like, you know, furniture and car. Importantly, there was no increased spending on temptation goods. So those are alcohol, drugs, and cigarettes. And this directly challenges people's stereotype of how people who are homeless will spend money. Because I think the pervasive assumption is if you give most people money, they're going to squander it on drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we found. We found zero increase in, you know, spending on alcohol, drugs, and cigarettes. So this reduced homelessness has direct cost savings for social services. So we quantified the cost savings for each participant over 1 year. And that savings was about $8,277 per year. This is just reduced shelter stays. When we accounted for hospital visits, police encounters, jail time, the savings was similar. So what this means was the cash transfer was cost effective. It actually it saved the government and society over $700 per person per year. Like that's the net savings at the end. And I think that's also surprising to a lot of people. So these are the primary findings we have.
Was it difficult when you were setting out to get this project off the ground? Was it something that you wanted to stay within the Metro Vancouver area? Was it difficult to find participants who'd want to be a part of the study?
We had a team of interviewers visiting shelters. These are 22 shelters across the Lower Mainland. So from North Vancouver all the way to Abbotsford, covering a wide range of, you know, neighborhoods and cities. And I have to say that these individuals are, we have screening criteria to screen people in shelters. So people have to pass the screening to get into the study. And we, you know, screened based on, you know, homelessness duration. They have to be homeless for less than 2 years. No severe levels of substance use, alcohol use, and psychiatric symptoms. Canadian citizen or permanent resident and age of 19 to 65. So if you pass all of these criteria, then you will be enrolled into the study.
When you were going through like the interview process and finding participants, was the question that you were asking how you got into homelessness, was that something that you ever were looking at, or were you just?
We did. We asked them what's the reason for this episode of homelessness. The primary reason was evictions. The second reason was financial constraint. So what this suggests is that they became homeless because they couldn't pay rent.
So less of like a lot of the other stereotypical things that we may think that, you know.
Yeah, that we think that it's not, you know, it's more like mental illness or substance use, right? That's not even, I think only 5% of our participants were because of that reason, but it was not the reason for homelessness.
It's interesting because I've been following this study for a long time. I think you guys have gotten a lot of press about it. I think it's something that other countries have maybe started to look into. You know, the idea of giving people money is not a novel idea. Milton Friedman was famous for it back in the 1970s. He had it in a very different, very different way. I mean, obviously, a lot of people think about the idea of giving people money, but they never really think about the parameters of how you want to do it. What I love about what you guys did here is you guys gave people a big chunk and it was all at once. And then you just left them to be and they could do whatever they wanted with it. Is one of the things that you learned from that experience, was it surprising for you to see, you spent time with them, you gave them coaching. Was it surprising to see how people evolved over the whole year? Like the results that were coming?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we did give a portion of our participants workshop and coaching, which did not work. Mm-hmm. So we're abandoning that going forward. The main reasons why they didn't work. But we were actually surprised by the findings because, you know, we didn't think that the $7,500 would get them to housing necessarily. The reason being Vancouver is super expensive. As you know, there's a 1% vacancy rate in the housing market. And for someone who's staying in a shelter, the average wait to get into housing was 6 months. It's actually between 6 months and 1 year. So we actually didn't think that the cash transfer would let them get into housing, but they actually did. So that was incredible. And actually a lot of participants moved into housing within 1 month of the cash transfer. So that was surprising. That really just goes to show how ready they were to get back and all they needed was cash.
Where did you guys find the money to fund this? Was this funded through the UBC or did you guys?
So this study was funded by partly a government grant from ESDC, but most of the money came from just donations from private donors and foundations.
Is this something where you, like now that you've had the study come out, is this something where you want to approach maybe the federal or provincial governments and maybe looking, getting them to maybe have more a collaborative
effort? Yes, we are. We're in active discussions with the BC government and the federal government about potential policy changes.
It makes you really rethink kind of the concept of the welfare state, how we allocate. You know, one of the things that I always had to deal with when I was, and I still think about this sometimes when it comes to our social, our welfare state, and the amount of money that we give people that are on social assistance, is I used to always think in my head, I'm like, why don't we just give them more money so they can just get out of poverty instead of just giving them kind of like this baseline of mine. And also what's so interesting is that like, if you get any other assistance or you get a job or something, like this, you lose all that. And so you lose that kind of like that, the stability of having that money maybe because you need a little bit to get up. And I think people don't recognize that. And I think what I loved about what you guys did here is that like, $7,500 was maybe not in Vancouver a lot, but it still was enough to propel someone to get out of poverty. I've always found that fascinating about in the way we think about that. Did you get any pushback from other people who, when you were going through the study, way people think about our society in the sense of like, because we have this pervasive capitalistic mindset that everyone has to earn it and you have to, you know, we're not going to give people handouts. When you were doing this, the survey through people, what were the major responses that you were getting from people? Like, what were they thinking that these people would spend the money on?
Oh, yeah. So we asked, this is not homeless people. This is people from the public in the US. When we described our study to these people, we said, you know, how much do you think they would spend on rent, you know, clothes, temptation goods? So we found that, again, people tend to be biased against people in homelessness. So they think that these cash recipients will spend more than $300 per month on alcohol, drugs, and cigarettes, which is way off. The reality is around $100. So I think that highlights the kind of the bias or the mistrust we have or people have toward individuals in homelessness.
What do you think that comes from?
Because I think people have a very different, very wrong idea of who the homeless people are. You know, when you say homeless people, the image we have in mind is somebody on the street asking for money or using substance. Right. That population, people on the street, only makes up a fraction of the homeless population. The vast majority of people who are homeless are in shelters. They're not in public sight or plain view. There are hidden homeless. So they're couch surfing or sleeping in their cars. But we don't see them. The public has no access to them. So we don't think of them as homeless. We don't even know they exist. Whereas, you know, as I mentioned, the sample in our study is not the prototypical homeless person on the street. And I think that that's partly why we have such a different idea of who the homeless people are, how they will manage money, et cetera.
What was the ratio to men and women in this study?
So it's about 40% female, so 60% male.
So I guess one of the things is like, what was the reception from the people in the study?
They thought the cash transfer was life-changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really changed their life. It took a lot of work for them to get out of homelessness and get into stable housing, but the cash transfer was instrumental.
And have you talked to any of these people since the study was published?
Well, we have one. We actually the Stowe Foundation for Social Change has hired one of our graduates as our current staff, and because, you know, we're running new studies at this point. So we're in constant contact with that person. I mean, but the rest, we have lost touch. We couldn't. I mean, the studies ended in 2020.
Yeah. So it's been a couple of years, yeah. So
it's been a while since we reached out to them.
It's interesting, like a lot of things that we, when you talk about this in the study, like one of the things you say is like 150 million people worldwide currently experience homelessness, 2% of the global world population. Life expectancy of a person on homelessness is 8 to 13 years less than the average person. And then the estimated average annual costs of providing health and social services for homeless people is $5,148 USD. But then if you add in any mental aspects to it, it's over 55,000 per year per Canadian or per citizen. I mean, sometimes we don't recognize the immense costs homelessness is to our, basically our health services and our police services and all the shelters and everything like this. And it's just, what's interesting is that your study was actually cheaper than it would have been to actually keep these people on the streets.
Yeah.
I think that's just the overall concept of it. I think it's just a reframing. And I think what I love about what you guys have done here is it's, you're really starting to start that conversation for people to maybe reframe their concept and how they view it. Collaborating, because there was a couple of the authors in the study with you as well. So it was you and Ryan Dwyer, and then Anita, and then obviously Claire. Did each of you have a different part in this? Like, did you each have to, like, was one of you spending more time on
it? Yeah. I mean, we worked very closely for more than 5 years to do the study. I mean, Claire was the CEO of FSC at that point. So I was responsible for the research component and data collection analysis. So we met, you know, on a weekly basis, sometimes more than once a week to update, to problem shoot. We had a team of interviewers who were primarily, you know, reaching out to participants to collect data. We're managing community partners, funders, government partners. So yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of work, but the close collaboration was key to getting the project done. Because as you know, academic research doesn't involve community typically. And, you know, this is really a cross-sectoral effort.
What did it teach you about yourself going through this whole process? What did you learn about this and like just seeing this?
So I, like you, grew up in poverty as well. I grew up in China, which, you know, in the 80s, so it was poor. Everybody was poor. And when I got my PhD, I couch surfed for 3 months. So technically that's also homeless. So I had lived experience of poverty. And, you know, for me, I just think that we need to give more credit to people in homelessness. We need to, you know, trust them more than we currently do, which is we don't trust them at all. That perception has to change. It confirms what I believe, which is cash works. Cash perhaps is one of the best solutions out there to fight poverty. Yeah. I mean, I think now is I'm working with policymakers to hoping to change kind of the current income assistance and how we fight poverty and homelessness in Canada.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, there's a really great book written by Matthew Desmond that came out this past year called Poverty by America, which I encourage.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew's done some great work. He also wrote a really good book in 2016, I think it's called Evicted, which is one of the best books I've ever read. And just, you know, him getting into the communities, spending time with people, going through things. When you read those books, one of the things that come away from you is the personal connection that you find. But you realize these are just regular people. They're not people that are any different from us. They've just unfortunately come on some hard times. Maybe made some bad decisions here and there. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're just trying to survive, just like every one of us. And sometimes it's hard for them to live in an environment where they're just not seen. Because once you get into that really deep poverty and especially homelessness, you know, you're cast off in our society, and it's a really a troubling thing. What was the experience of dealing with all the shelters? What did the shelters think about this, the ones that you worked with? And did they provide any major feedback for you? And then what was the response for them going through this whole process with you?
Oh, the shelters basically just let us go in, let our interviewers go in to recruit people, but they had very little to do with the study itself. Of course, they supported the study because it's helping their guests, right? That they call people stay in the shelter guests. So they, you know, I think all the shelters we worked with are extremely supportive of this solution, of this intervention. But again, they're overwhelmed on a daily basis. They didn't really help with the study other than just letting us come in and do our screening survey. Yeah. And then now we're working with a broader network of community organizations. So not just shelters.
What's on the horizon for you guys now? So how are you going to look? You said you're looking to expand on this concept and what you want to do for
it. Yeah, we're expanding this project. I can't disclose too much because the study's ongoing, and we're hoping to expand to other cities in Canada as well.
And have you spoken with other countries or other regions that have done something similar?
Yeah, mostly US and UK.
US and UK. Okay, very cool. Mm-hmm. I think what you guys are doing is fantastic. I think this type of stuff is, especially in a city like Vancouver, where rent is ridiculous now and it's moving up. And I think I live in Chinatown and I see a lot of issues, the downtown east side stuff. And that's only, like you said, that's only a small fraction of it. There's a lot of people out there who are, like you said, couch surfing, living in shelters. They're in and out of homes. They're in and out of stuff like this. Like you said, a lot of it's just stuff that we don't see. I think at the beginning of what you started here, you said you screened 732 participants from 22 different shelters, ages 19 to 65. And you ended up having 229 that passed, but you eventually lost 115 of them because you just couldn't get a hold of them. But I mean, this study could have been a lot bigger.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to follow homeless people. They don't have an address. They don't have a phone or internet. So it sometimes takes weeks to find one person.
Yeah, no,
it's just really difficult.
I can only imagine. I mean, and just meeting with them and then getting them to comply and meet with you and sit down with you and then kind of be honest about their experiences and what's going on. I mean, the main reason why I want to speak with you today is also just getting this in people's heads and getting people to think about it a little bit differently, maybe have a little bit more curiosity, maybe pick up a book like Rutger Bregman, or maybe just read your studies and just think about it different in a different light. So that way we have a lot more compassion, a lot more empathy, and just, recognize that we, a couple bad falls, any one of us could be in this situation. And I think that's...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Look at the gratefulness that we have. I appreciate you today. I let you go. I know you're very busy. Keep up all the great work. And I hope to hear a lot more great things coming from the study and from Foundations for Social Change.
Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.